You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
For now, we are joined by Professor Jennifer Curtin from the University of Auckland for a slight bit of political commentary. Kia ora, Jennifer.
Kia ora.
So let's start by talking about Omicron, because very recently, the Prime Minister said it's not a case of if, but when there will be an Omicron outbreak here in Aotearoa. And we have seen Australia handling an Omicron outbreak for some time right now. And do you think, is there any sort of policy lesson that we can pick up from there?
Yes, I think this is a really interesting question, because commentators in Australia are talking about how Australia has moved from control of COVID to chaos or purposeful approaches to parody, because like New Zealand, for a long time they closed borders, had lots of restrictions, and then tried to focus on their vaccination rates. But then New South Wales and the federal government there started to loosen the requirements during Delta, and by the time that, you know, they were never able to sort of squash Delta the way we've been working on here, and then Omicron came in over the top. So what we're seeing in Australia is, you know, tens of thousands of cases a day. The testing system has collapsed. The contact tracing system has collapsed. The kids' booster, you know, the kids' vaccination rates and the booster rates are still quite low. And so there are some really important lessons, I think, here around, you know, making sure our traffic light system and masking system, contact tracing systems are held firm, if you like, because it, you know, the Prime Minister has said it's still a significant foe. I think she talked about this morning. But what Australia's public health experts are calling for is reducing the booster time from 4 months to 3 months. So that's actually coming in three states in Australia from today through to the rest of the week, that they expedite kids' vaccines, that they delay the opening of schools, because while kids might not get it, parents, teachers, grandparents will get it, and that rapid antigen tests are free to ensure workplace safety, so that people with the virus aren't going to work and infecting more people, and that there be a more accessibility to N95 masks if people are working in close contact indoors, because these masks are more expensive, but they're also more rigorous at, you know, preventing some of that transmissibility that comes with Omicron.
And jumping on that, though, because that links very nicely into our next topic, which is about the cabinet announcement that the Prime Minister will be making later today. And particularly one of the decisions that people will no doubt be focusing on is the traffic light system, where whether Northland will make out of red today. What we saw, because we saw a lot of businesses in Northland, up in the north, are clamoring for a move down a level, but as far as we know, vaccination rates up there hasn't still hit the threshold of 90%. Do you think the Prime Minister will stand today stand firm on the 90% threshold, or may just move them down because they've been in the red far too long?
I think this is an interesting one, but I think that the Prime Minister would be sensible to leave it at red, because while the business community are calling for it to move to orange, the mayors across Northland, there's some division. Like, some mayors are really concerned about moving from red to orange. Others want to see orange happen now. And Ngāti Hine Trust Chief Executive is also, Jeff Milner, he's also very cautious about wanting to move to orange. And I think the challenge with the DHB model is the Northland DHB covers a really diverse and very large area. And so there are still pockets of Northland where first vaccinations are still only at around 83 to 85%, which means double-vaxxed people, the ratio is much lower than anywhere near 90%. So using that blanket trigger of 90% is masking a lot of the more remote communities up there. And, you know, we really need to hear Māori voices and, you know, Māori health providers' views on this, not just the business community, because we know that a lot of Māori health experts have called out the government for not protecting Māori sufficiently from this virus up until this point. The Waitangi Tribunal also found that, and so the government will be very aware that it actually has significant responsibility to Māori in the north.
Okay, we're running out of time now, so a little bit blitz over to our final topic on the recent tsunami in Tonga. So the government now has deployed several naval ships and a P3 Orion aircraft to Tonga already. Well, the ACT Party told us yesterday that the government was not acting fast enough, but what do you think of the government's response so far in relation to the situation in Tonga?
Well, there's a political analyst who sits in the press gallery called Richard Harmon, and he runs a website called Politic. And his take on the way in which New Zealand responded a couple of days ago is that actually, you know, there is a requirement from any nation who wants to give aid and assistance and send what's required to wait to be asked by the country that, you know, by Tonga. And his view is that New Zealand followed that crisis response correctly because New Zealand didn't know what Tonga needed. Tonga knows what Tonga needs and needs to communicate that and ask New Zealand to come in. And so when it became clear that contamination from the ash and the water supplies and evacuation was needed, that is what New Zealand has sent. I think the broader interesting thing about this Tonga crisis is that there may be more tsunami and more eruptions that may come. And it kind of underscores that New Zealand's Defence Force is not just about military hardware. It's about having capacity to be able to respond in ways that our Pacific neighbours need. And that responsibility is on us and, you know, our acquisitions.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.